Hello, and welcome to the RichardBarnes.com podcast. The emphasis of the podcast is to show, through others' experiences and insight, a beacon of knowledge, perspective, wit, and warning. A tale of life's lessons, in whatever field. If you have any questions or comments, please feel free to email me at richard@richardbarnes.com. Okay, it's time to podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the RichardBarnes.com podcast. It is a pleasure today to welcome my guest, Tony Terranova. Who's that keen to talk to me? He didn't even say hello.
I just wait for you to tell me when to speak, mate. You know, I do as I'm told.
Oh, really? You've been married a long time then?
Yeah, we've been together 30 years nearly, Rich.
Yeah, I'm 18 years and I do the same. I wait to be told what I'm supposed to do as well as, but it's usually by her indoors, you know.
Okay, mate, I'll try and do better. You tell me when I'm supposed to speak.
You speak whenever you want to speak, because I should introduce you, actually. I don't quite know how to introduce you. I was thinking about this introduction a little while ago, and I was going to tell this story that a few years ago I went to Blackpool, and we went to the Talk of the Coast. Now, the Talk of the Coast is a little night spot that is famous for having comedians. And the comedians it has are usually well-known people or new people that go on to great things. Anyway, on this particular night, we went to see a guy called... we went there, not knowing who we were going to see, and we saw a guy called Paddy Green. Now, I'd never heard of Paddy Green, and I got chatting to people there and thereabouts, and I actually got chatting to the host of the night, and I said, "Who is Paddy Green?" And he described Paddy Green as a comedian's comedian. Now, if I'm introducing Tony Terranova, I'd introduce him as a martial artist, or a philosopher's philosopher, because his story is quite unusual. His story is quite profound, and the elements that make up that story are drawn from all over the world. Now, you are by trade an engineer, but not any old engineer. You are an engineer that deals in power plants. And I'm not talking about, you know, a chrysanthemum with an attitude. We're talking about things that make electricity and power.
Yeah, my whole engineering background is equipment specialised for the oil, power and gas. So it's refineries, petrochemical, power plants. That's basically where it is. But I'm certainly not a martial artist, Rich. I wouldn't put myself up there when there's greats up there like Master Sken, you know. I'm just a guy who does his best, man.
Okay. You've been doing martial arts. That's one facet of what you do. You run at a club called Fighting Fit Martial Arts. Is that correct?
Yeah, together with my... business partner Mark Collette.
It's something that you came up with yourself, a concept. It was redefined the way in which you wanted to teach. You saw deficiencies in the way in which martial arts were taught, and you came up with your own style. Is that right?
Well, it's not my own style. It's just martial arts is movement, and you've just got to be creative and find your own way. And MMA presented that for me, really, where I could experiment and get away from crystallization and set forms and being told how to do things exactly, because it is a live art. It's something that, you know, evolves continually. You've only got to look at BJJ. It's evolving every year. So I just wanted the freedom to express myself, and within that allow people to grow themselves and express themselves and not become clones. So it was really driven by that creativity, that interest in the whole thing of, you know, BJJ, wrestling, boxing, Muay Thai, because, you know, being an engineer, you like to break things down, put them back together again and find solutions. There's an old saying, engineers are better by design, Rich.
So you sat down. I just want to touch on this to start with, because I'm going to use this as an illustrative point to show how you approach the world, if that's okay, because I want to talk about your philosophy and your life. And I have in front of me something you sent, which I'll describe what it is in a sec. But let me just go through this martial arts thing. So you sat down feeling that you wanted to take the best of what martial arts had out there. You sat with a blank piece of white paper and you started to write what you thought needed to be in there to make it work for today.
Not so much work, it's more an expression of things that are alive. You know, if you go back to the ancient Greeks and the Romans and that ancient part of time where combat was incredibly character building and it was very alive. So, you know, when you make training interesting and alive and different, you get to find out a lot about yourself and you realize that you've got to create a system within a system. You know, I'm a certain size, a certain weight. So when I train a particular discipline, be it BJJ or be it Muay Thai, I have to create my system for me within that system. So, and it's allowing people to do that for themselves so that they understand the honesty of it, you know, because and as you're growing and you're teaching, you won't be teaching what you're teaching now next year. You evolve, you grow, because if you're still teaching exactly the same things, then, you know, you either by fluke got it right first time or you're not looking at everything. So it was more a generic interest for me, which fitted into a lifestyle of keeping fit and keeping in good shape. Because to do this stuff properly, you know, you've got to have your head's got to be in the right place, your conditioning's got to be in the right place, and you need to be balanced in your life. And then the whole thing fits together, you know. So it was just really my journey, if you like, not create something that's, you know, I'm a guru or anything like that. Nothing to do with that. It's just me going on an exploration, because that's what engineers do. They like to look at everything.
So as part of that, as training aids, you redefined those as well. You looked at what you wanted to achieve with people, looked what people needed to achieve within the structure that you'd found. And you came up with new devices. I mean, tell me about these. You know, your thought process with this. I'm probably not describing this very well, but
that's all right. But basically, to break it down into very simple terms, everything I do, I go back to the primal days. You know, we've been on this planet for millions of years, and our DNA is encoded deeply. And within that DNA is exactly, you know, how we like to function. And so when I started, you know, to coach and go on my journey and continue to go to people for information like John B. Will, Chico Mendes, Master Sken and Jeff and Pete and others, you know, I looked at how the body moved and realized that going back to ancient times, we would pick up boulders and we'd pick up big trees and one of us would have to carry a sheep for half a mile and it would be like, it wouldn't be drop sets, pyramid sets and all that. It would just be spontaneous. So I basically went away and went to a friend of mine and gave him a load of drawings and made my own weight training equipment. My bars are from 2-inch to 6-inch diameter. I drill cricket balls and put bolts through them and hang them off the ceiling to do my pull-ups. So it's not just a pull-up bar, you know. I'll do all sorts of, you know, stuff to make sure the body's worked in a multi-joint, multi-direction, in some ways unstructured, because, you know, that kind of freedom, you know, and intensely and short for 30 minutes is where we started off, you know, when we first came on this planet. So it's just going back to that primal, if you like, in terms of eating, training and lifestyling a little bit, you know, trying not to get too bogged down in today's, you know, over-the-top techie stuff, you know.
Do you think we lose sight of what we're about? Is that the way in which you approach things?
I think everything that you do has got to have a balance. I'm convinced that's why the seesaw was invented. You know, if you know, like you train in martial arts, and everyone thinks because everyone trains in martial arts and you go to a martial arts instructor and you're going to learn, he's going to be a guru. It's not true. You know, there's this mystique about martial arts that shouldn't be there. You can go to a swimming instructor or a rugby coach or a football coach, and they can all have that wisdom. You can speak to your local postman or your butcher, and you can impart great wisdom. So for me, it was more about staying healthy and just using that as a platform, purely because combat does test your character a little bit, and it does, you know, keep you on your toes. And that's why I did it. And also finding a balance of trying to remember where we were, because our forefathers were actually cleverer than us. They had more time than we do. We're time poor now. I don't care what anybody says. Most of the times when you ask a guy what he wants in life, he'll usually say something like more time. You know, so I wanted to create something where I didn't have to have sheets and register everything, just the freedom to just train in every direction with every sort of weird piece of kit going and keep it fun together with a set of guys who are your friends, because that's the driver. If you train with friends, you keep each other accountable and it's sustainable instead of like going crazy seven times a week, you know.
So you've taken a martial, looked at your martial arts because it's something that's been a passion of yours for how many years?
Well, I've been training since my late teens, and then I had a bit of a break. So I probably started training when I was about 20 odd, and I'm 56 now. So you've been
training for quite a number of years. You've got to a point where you thought, you know what, that works. I'm not so sure about that. That's okay. Do you know what? That's definitely not what I should be doing. And you've got your blank piece of paper. You've written down the bits that you want to include. And from that point, you thought, okay, these are the things I'm going to want to include. How am I best going to achieve those? And at that point, you've seen a deficiency in the training aids that most of us would have. You've taken the engineering side of your brain that you've developed through years of being a cutting edge, a top engineer that travels all over the world, and designed and developed your own training bits of kit to fulfill that. Now, okay, I get that bit. The question is then, what you've done with the martial arts bit and that methodology that you've approached, does it work?
Well, work is a subjective thing, isn't it? You know, all I can say is, you know, the answers in the results, show the answers. And, you know, I'm heading for 60 now and I'm fairly fit still without putting a massive amount of time in. I'm balanced with my time. You know, I don't have any injuries. I don't have any hip replacements. You know, I don't have any problems, you know, and I thank the universe for that, or thank God, or thank whoever's helped me. And really the answer to that is to speak to people who train with me, because I think it would be arrogant of me to say that. And, you know, I'd never be so arrogant to say I've got the answers.
All right. Let me re-ask the question. Yeah. You know, I'm asking you, does it work? Let me ask you this. Have you found that there are significant benefits in the methodology that you now use when you approach things as you have done with the way you've done martial arts?
Okay, that's a nice way of putting it, because I don't class as, you know, deficiencies or put anything down. I'm a very neutral guy. It's if you like, it's my road, you know, and it's kind of like what I do. Yes, I have found benefits. When you train with 3-inch bars, your levers are different, so you get to work your grip, you get to work your forearm, you get to work your ligaments more. You know, when you're doing pull-ups on cricket balls, you get to work your grips on your fingers more than you would on a little bar where you're pulling up. Doing multi-joint with, you know, big kettlebells and weighting one side of your body with a power bag helps you to bring in your stabilizers. So, yes, your stabilizer muscles come in. So in giving a specific reply to your question, yes, I can see specific benefits that are not flaky or fluffy or BS. They're really there.
They work for you, and they just for you, or they work for anybody that, you know, adopts this methodology in practice?
For everybody, because we're all designed the same, but everybody will train their way, you know. But if you train with the right equipment, with, you know, a mix of things, then you're taking your body the way it was designed to work, in the direction it was designed to work, to give you maximum, if you like, strength, maximum flexibility. You've got to think of all your energy systems, aerobic, anaerobic, lactic. You've got to think of your static strength. You've got to think of your explosive strength if you want well-being. Because, you know, in caveman days, if you and me went out hunting, one of us would be faster than the other. But essentially, we would have similar skills. We'd be explosive. We'd have static strength. You know, we'd have cardio and so forth. So, and sitting on a chair all day looking at a computer isn't going to do it. So,
oh, bugger.
Doing it, you know. So, yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Okay. Let me go back to what I said a few minutes ago, because you sent me something and I alluded to it, and I shall allude to it no more. You've sent me a copy, an A4 piece of paper with your philosophy, your motivation, your inspiration for life. And these are the bits and bobs, bullet points that you've collected to this point, all condensed onto one A4 piece of paper.
Yeah, I sent that because you said to me, you can never get all this stuff on a piece of paper, and it was actually already on, so I emailed it to you.
Okay, I'm going to come back to that. Let's just talk how we got to this way of doing things. We spoke about it, how you've took the martial arts approach. But let's talk about you being an engineer. Something you've been doing for...
Since I was 16, that's when I started my apprenticeship, so that's 40 years.
Okay, and you've been, with this, you travel all over the world.
Yeah, I've stayed in the same industry, and I've worked in most parts of the world, you know, ranging from Siberia to Russia to Japan to Mexico to Canada, you know. There's not many places I haven't been. There's a few, but not many.
You said that people are time poor these days. I can imagine going from place to place, then, that, you know, you're going to have a lot of downtime between, you know, the job that you do. I mean, going to, you're talking about Siberia. Siberia is, what, a 15-hour flight to get there? So you're sitting around on your backside doing nothing for all that time?
Yeah, all this came about because I realised I'd be travelling, and I realised I would have a lot of time on my hand, and I realised, you know, and everything that I've learned and I'm about to discuss now is knowledge from others, and I would never steal anybody's thunder. That knowledge is all out there. There's people out there whose books I've read. I've taken a page out of each one. I don't, you know, necessarily buy into it all. So anything that I state here is out there in the public domain. This is just my blueberry pie putting it together. So I give credit to all those people. I would never steal anybody's thunder. But to cut a long story short, I recognize that there's no such thing as time management. What are we going to do? Put a phone call into the universe and see if maybe Jupiter and Mars can just kind of change course and change gravity a little bit, give us another hour today, Rich? No, there's only management of yourself, period. You know, and reading Peter Drucker's work, who's an amazing business strategist, when he tells you first things first, last things never, made me realize that time I had, I could become a mobile university. So I thought, if I'm going to be on a plane to Japan for 14 hours, rather than drinking scotch and watching crappy movies that are dubbed, I might as well study. And I decided I would study anything, because the mind works great when you read something on quantum physics, then you read something on biology, then you read something on well-being, then you read a life story, a biography of somebody who's overcome adversity. And I just went on this path that every trip I made, I would continue with my training and I would adjust it and modify to just do a little bit a day, even if it's 5 minutes or 20 minutes. And I listened to audios and I read stuff. And it's what Tony Robbins calls net time, no extra time. If you're walking the dog, you can put an audio on, and during that time, you might learn, you know, something about molecules of emotion, like Candice Persis audios to let you understand your body. You might learn more about NLP and how the different chemicals in your body affect your well-being, and so on. So that's how it came about, because it's just curiosity. I like to be curious with my mind. So does that answer that?
Let me be contentious and come back to you and suggest you're talking cobblers, Mr. Terranova. And the point I'd like to raise is, you said I would continue with my training. How the heck can you continue with your training when you say you're enjoying your martial arts, that's your thing, that's what you go and do, when you're stuck on a plane or in a hotel room? You need a dojo, surely, to go and train what you train.
No, you don't need anything, Rich. I used to just put one of those little bars in my suitcase that extends and catches onto the side of a door. That was my pull-up bar. And then just use my body, you know. So all you need to do is you've got your body. You know, if you look at the ancient Indian wrestlers, I mean, I bought an Indian wrestling book. It took me a year to get it. It was out of copy, and eventually I got a copy from someone in India covered in curry. I can still smell the curry on it. It was brilliant. Those guys, Those guys did 1,000 and 2,000 Hindu press-ups before they trained, and 4,000 Hindu squats. They don't need anything else. So in life, you have to adapt. So, you know, if you're away from the dojo or the gym, well, as long as you've got a room that's at least 4 foot by 5 foot, you can do something. So it's just a matter of it's making it a habit, because life's a habit, and then the habit becomes you, but...
Okay, so Mobile University, you planned twice for your trip, one for the business that you're going to do and one for the downtime. So the downtime was actually productive time.
Yeah, you're making a good distinction between being busy and productive. And, you know, we've all got the same time on our hands. You know, Leonardo da Vinci and Isaac Newton and Blaise Pascal and all these great people, they all had the same time we do in a day, but their ability to self-manage was better. So the day is going to pass anyway, so you might as well just do something that, you know, keeps you interested and keeps you alive and keeps you moving. Why not?
Well, how did you come to this conclusion? Was there an epiphanous moment in your life, or is it just something you've always been keen to do as, from being a kid? Have you been like a nosy, curious kid that was always watching the bin men and figuring out where the refuse went, or watching the guys dig up the road and you'd stand in there, look, you know, and marvel at the fact that they've piped gas, you know, to your house 3 or 4 foot below the ground, and you know, before that it was a you know, something you would never have conceived. Is this something that you've done? You've always been naturally nosy or curious or thirsty, or is it, or did you have a moment where, you know, you thought, do you know what, I want to learn more. I don't feel like I'm, you know, I know enough. I don't think I can serve enough people. I don't think I can leave enough legacy from the knowledge I've accrued so far.
I don't have an epiphany. I mean, I respect everybody, and I respect everything that everybody does, and we're all different, you know. And I think, you know, people sometimes say epiphany and spirituality. Well, I respect all that, and I respect, you know, the fact you can have monks in a monastery and all that, but I think you learn more outside the monastery by just looking at people and looking at life and being right in the middle where the action is. And I think what drove me to it was realizing that, you know, one of the key to happiness was to find your own thing, your own interest, and stay involved with it. You know, it's what Viktor Frankl calls existential vacuum. You know, if you study Viktor Frankl, that was his theme, and he used to say that a lot of unhappiness comes because there's a vacuum existing. You don't have to fill a vacuum with, like, you know, lots of money and overdo it with tons of friends. You can fill a vacuum with just an interest in something and that keeps you passionate. And it was just from a youth age, I was always building stuff, building bikes, building trolleys. So the engineer thing was natural. And then engineers are inquisitive. So, and it's just, it keeps you healthy. It keeps you interested. And when you read things from the people who've got more knowledge than you, you begin to get information about how to handle anxiety, how to handle depression, how to better cope with life's curveballs, because they're going to visit you, and the importance of diet and how your diet affects your chemical production and how your chemicals are your neuropeptides, which is your transmitters in your brain. And then as you read more and more, you begin to realize and educate yourself that it's all about education, and you begin to understand who you are, what you're made of, what you're like when you're, you know, when you're pushed. So you don't do silly things. You know, a common example is someone will come to me and go, yeah, I'm stressed out. I'm really stressed out. Can you help me? And I'll go, well, yeah, you know, what are you about? And they say, well, I can handle a lot of stress. I go, well, why are you taking it on then? They can't really handle it. It's once you educate yourself with how food impacts you and how movement impacts you, and it's not that complicated. Keep things simple. Don't be like, otherwise it's not sustainable. You start to find a way to keep balance instead of being high and low, which I think's, you know, a nicer way to live. It's just my take, Rich.
Okay. So do you think, you know, you're talking about life's curveballs. Was this another form, well, consuming the knowledge and becoming able to understand what people were saying and what people were teaching? Do you think that's a kind of a form of self-defense? Is that the way in which you dealt with it? You thought, you know, if life is going to chuck me curveballs, if these things are out there that are going to make me depressed or whatever, I'm going to preempt, you know, what could happen by consuming and training in the same way as you would do with something physical.
In some ways, but in other ways, it's to remain more anchored and more centered so that I'm of more value to those people around me and the people that need me as well. So, you know, when things go wrong, what puts them right is tools, you know. So if the only tool you've got in your toolbox is a hammer, you'll approach everything as if it's a nail. But if you've got more tools, you'll approach it, you know, with a vernier and a measuring tape and a different type of screwdriver and a different way around. So when you have problems, you've got to find tools to help you cope with them, because you're always going to have problems. The only time you're not going to have a problem is when you take your final dirt nap and you get to say goodbye to the planet. So, you know, and one good thing about the sort of engineering work I'm in, you realize that the solution to the problem is an aspect of the problem. So every time you've got, you know, a problem, the solution is tied in there within the problem itself. So, you know, you go away and you tell yourself, you know, okay, I'm feeling a bit anxious. Right, what are the tools to shut that down? Okay, I need to have a bit more common sense. How do I go about finding that common sense? So, and then when you go deeper, you find out real neat stuff about how your body reacts to emotions and how your cells are like opiate receptors that receive these chemicals from your brain. So when you're anxious, you're full of cortisol, and that's why you're feeling anxious. And when you're happy, you've got endorphins, and understanding how the motor cortex on the body works. I mean, serotonin is the feel-good drug. Well, the muscles of your jaw are connected to where the serotonin is released in your motor cortex. So when you smile, you'll release serotonin anyway. So that's why, you know, sometimes you look at people that smile and you think, well, they're smiling, they're happy. There's a reason for it. You know, there is scientific reasons behind why things happen, Richard, and that's really where I'm coming from.
This A4 piece of paper in front of me that you've written are your hard-earned lessons that you've derived thus far. We joked just before I started recording, you know, as life goes on, are you going to need a bigger piece of A4 to put extra ones on? But here's my question before we get into the hard-earned lessons, because I want to pick out a few of these. You've touched on them already. We've talked about food and the way in which it influences you. We've talked about, you know, being time poor and picking the things that you know will benefit you most. I want to, like I say, delve into this piece of A4. But first of all, if somebody is not like you, and from the perspective of you've got an engineering mind. Say for example, somebody's not an engineer; they're more creative, they're more arty. Do you think that, you know, the same methodologies which you've espoused so far are something they can use? Do you think, you know, they can derive the same benefits if they don't look at it from an engineering perspective?
Of course, we're all different, and that's what makes it the planet fantastic, is having that difference. I mean, you know, the future is going to be neuropsychiatry, not psychiatry, because as we're getting more into understanding the brain, science is beginning to explain some of these so-called miracles and myths that were there. You know, we all know now that through our senses we receive over a couple of million bits of information per second, but every human can only process 134, otherwise the nervous system fries. You know, and we know that of those 134, you delete, distort, and generalize the information based on your belief. So if you're an arty, creative person, and your belief system will take things in a certain way, but the core principles are the same. You know, if you're getting an anxiety attack, whether you're a creative type, engineering type, or a Spartan type, what's going to shut it down is some simple systems of breathing, you know, some acknowledgements of the anxiety, how to calm it down, how to be quiet, and trust in your body, because your body will save you. It will save you if you trust in your body. So, and if you go back to the source, like Dr. Claire Weeks, you really find out about these things, and you find out that a lot of them are, you know, developing because of modern stresses and modern anxieties and the rubbish media and, you know, the politicians that we've got. So in answer to your question, anybody can be helped by this and they'll have their take on it because the fundamentals are the same. You know, what you eat affects your chemicals. Your chemicals affect your emotions, how you live, how you move, you know, how you structure your life, your habits, you know, how you form your habits, who you're involved with, you know, the ability to be quiet a little bit. Just calming the brain down by cooling the brain down by 1 degree Celsius increases the serotonin production, you know, and your brain works at different states from 3 hertz to 14 and 18 hertz. But everyone knows you need to be in the alpha state, 7 to 8 megahertz or hertz. I can't remember the detail.
Right.
So calming the brain is an important thing of being able to get a proper perspective on things, you know. So in answer to your question, everything I do is of value to everybody. They'll take their own version of way of handling it.
But the methodology you found, you think can be applied by anybody to anything. That approach is multilingual and multi time zone all.
Yeah, it's a crawl. It's not a race, Rich. It's realizing. You get to a certain age and you go, you know what? I can go in the fast lane and there's never a queue in the fast lane. That's interesting. I can get more done. But if I'm in the fast lane, I can only look at what's in front of me. But if I'm in the slow lane, I can look at everything that's around me. So everything is choice. And quite often, you know, if you're really honest with yourself and hold your feet to the fire, you know, when you get problems, half the time they could have been avoided with better thinking up front. There are some things we can't control, like Mother Nature and mother-in-law's bro, you know. So you just have to let those go. But a lot of the things that we can control, and you have to, like, not be swept in by self-help books. They're great. There's some wonderful people out there who I've taken pieces off, like Jim Rohn, Brian Tracy, Andy Robbins, you know, Richard Bandler, massive. But coming back to what you said, the type you are, creative or whether you're analytical, you take the bits that fit you. Don't believe everything, because that's where it's misleading, you know, where they say you can be anything. In my humble opinion, Rich, you can't be anything. You know, there's a lot of things. I've worked in the poorest parts of this world, and you try and tell one of those poor kids who's born in that area that, you know, you can be anything, you can do this. No, he needs a different strategy. He needs a different get-out-of-jail card. So that's where I'm pragmatic. That's where, if you like, my engineering side goes, whoa, the bullshit radar's on now. That doesn't work.
That's quite a contentious thing to say, really, and considering the, you know, you know, the self-help market and the amount of people looking at there. Are you saying then that if people adopt the approach to life that you have, that, you know, the self-help books to cure anxiety are not required, to cure depression, these aren't required, they're not the answer?
They are the answer. There's answers in different parts of them, and all the people that have written them, you know, should get a pat on the back. A, because they did it. B, because they went out there and put themselves out. And C, because they took the time to research. So what I'm saying to you, that there is your own individual goal in each one of those. Like, I know, you know, what I like to take out of Brian Tracy, you know, his psychology of achievement is still one of the best things out there. And I took it in its entirety. But there are other things that I've read, because, as you said earlier, I'm an analytical type, a pragmatic type, that I don't buy into, because for me, there has to be science behind things because of the nature of who I am. And I can find the science. I mean, I did NLP and qualified as NLP practitioner. But I went off and researched it deeper and realized that, you know, when they talk about a change of state and they talk about, you know, different sort of techniques, they're actually all underpinned and driven by the chemicals in the body and how those chemicals change the state and environment and things like that. So when they talk about pattern disruption, the pattern disruption has actually created a different chemical. So I wouldn't poo-poo anybody, Rich. You know, I think everyone requires a pat on the back. But what I'm saying is, just like everything else I've done, whoever's doing anything, make it your own. You don't have to you know, you don't have to follow something like a cult. I think that's dangerous.
Let me pick up. Okay, let's do some of these. How would you describe your list? I mean, I'm looking at these and I've written on the top of it hard-earned lessons. But how would you describe this A4 piece of paper? There's no title on this.
Well, no, it's just me keeping notes, and I sent it because you wound me up and told me you can't put this on an A4, and it was already on. I would describe it as my journal, my crib list, my reminder. You know, it's like a, because you have to remind yourself sometimes and you forget. It's my reminder to tell me that, you know, sometimes be very specific about things, have a clear line in the sand about things that you want to do. And remember that what you eat affects you. You know, sugar gives you an insulin spike. Well, insulin is a chameleon. It can disguise itself as a mineral type vitamin and get into your cells as something it's not supposed to be, which blocks all the good stuff getting in there, you know. And it's to remind me that money is important. I get upset when guys go, money's not everything. Well, it is. On a ranking basis, money's like air, water and oxygen in modern age, but you don't need millions to live with it. And it's like martial arts. I know guys who train like mad and they buy clothes so they can move loose in case they've got to have a fight. How big a gun do you need? You know, it's all a personal choice. How big a gun do you need? So for me, it's like a journal that reminds me, you know, like sometimes I lose a little bit of discipline and I remind myself that discipline is freedom. You know, if you're disciplined, you actually have more freedom. So, and if I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, I go, I need to call my jets. Because, you know, you've got to really realize there's so much out there. You just need to cool your jets and not believe your own press sometimes and relax. I mean, Blaise Pascal, who invented the pressure unit, Pascal, used to say, man's misery stems from the fact he can't sit quiet on his own for 30 minutes a day. And that is so true. Sometimes when you're having a bad time, just chill out. Just go quiet, even if it's for 10 minutes, and you'll be able to regroup, recenter, re-anchor. You'll see things in a different light. So in answer to your question, it's just my little journal list that reminds me, you know, when I'm coming off the rails a little bit, that I am human, I do make mistakes, and these are my little ropes that I can grab onto and go and find the caveat at the end of the rope, if you like, Rich.
I noticed with your answers so far, you always have a beginning, a middle, and the end always links it back to the beginning again.
Well, yeah, I guess, you know, if you look at the planet, it spins continually in one circle. Our brains actually work that way. If you study mind mapping and you study how Leonardo da Vinci was actually the inventor of mind mapping before Tony Buzan developed it further, you realize the mind does work in circular fashion. But, you know, why not get up and do your best to be happy for the day? And if you're not happy for the day, that's fine. You know, bad days happen. Just and if it's a really bad day, just get through it a second at a time. You know, I mean, I have my challenges, you know, so I'm not going to make a big deal of them. You just do the best that you can with what you have. But the main thing is tools. Once you've got tools and you understand, like, depression is so big at the moment, you know, and that's complex. You know, don't go to a person who suffers with depression and bootstrap them. They need proper help. And there's two forms of depression. One, that you need pills because the brain is inefficient. You might have an illness or you might have a disposition, you know, from birth. And then there's the other depression where it's not pill related, it's diet related, it's habit related, it's lifestyle related. And they're two very different things. And I think if you start drawing lines in the sand on things like that, like we talk about the debt in this country, you can fix that tomorrow. Just reduce the NHS bill by half by making people fitter and do it by inspiration. You know, inspiration is like a shower. It lasts a day. That's all it lasts. You need to go and get it again the next day. And the only way that you make change is when you're inspired in spirit, you know, and that's when you make the change. I mean, quite often the biggest change comes at the point when you've got the biggest self-disgust in your life, and that's fine. So it's that lack of community spirit. Like the guys I train with have been together with me for years. We help each other. We turn up for each other. That's why it's sustainable, you know.
Let me pick out some of these then from your journal. Now, normally I would sit down and do a little bit of prep. I know it doesn't sound like it to most people, but I do a little bit of prep when I'm talking to somebody. Because I don't want to, you know, talk a load of conkers. Well, talk less conkers than normal. And also a little bit of respect for the person I'm talking to. So I like to know a little bit about them. And what I do with my bits of paper is I'll do my research and I'll get my highlighter pen and mark out the bits that I want to talk about. Now, I've got your journal in front of me. And none of it's highlighted. And I did this on purpose because I just wanted to put my finger on the page and read out any one of them. I think this must be 40 or 50 bullet points on here that fill up this piece of A4 piece of paper. And then just fire them at you and ask you to explain them or talk on them a little bit more, if you would. So...
By the way, what you've just done there is very mind map based. That's how you do mind mapping. You just start somewhere and you work from the middle out. So what you've done there is awesome.
Well, actually, I'm going to turn it on its head now because I'm going to put a little bit of randomality. Is that a word? I'm going to put a bit of randomness into it. Now, I'm going to have my finger along the side of the page, moving it up and down in a consistent motion. I'm going to ask you to stop and see what we stop on. Then I'm going to read out whatever line it is that my finger's pointing. I am in motion now. You just need to say stop.
Stop.
But in the fast lane, you only see what's in front. But in the slow lane, you can look at everything. What's that about?
So that's the choice you make. When you're on the motorway and you're doing 120 mile an hour, you're getting there quicker, but you can only look at what's in front of you. And you really got to look at what's in front of you because that's your focus is narrow, yeah? But when you're in the slow lane, you can take your time. You can see what's on your left, what's on your right, what's behind you, what's in front of you, and you'll get there slower. So you as an individual have to make a choice. In economics, they call it opportunity cost. So you've got an opportunity to become a black belt BJJ, but the cost is you got to go to Brazil for 3 years and not have any money and leave your family behind. That is a choice you make. So every time you do that, you need to sit back and say to yourself, who am I? What am I made of? And what am I like when I'm pushed? It's like a guy wanting to become a top salesman, but he can't stand rejection. He shouldn't go into sales, you know? So that's what that is about. That reminds me, whenever I'm doing something, am I going in a fast lane or am I pedaling along in the inside lane?
Okay, finger in motion. Shout stop.
Stop.
Native American Indian chiefs are based on personal character, honesty, and even temperament, sense of responsibility. What's that to remind you of?
I worked in Oklahoma for a while, and I met a wonderful friend called Dennis Francis. We're still close, and he's got a bloodline to the Native Americans, and he would give you, if he liked you, he would give you a nickname of an Indian chief. If he didn't like you, he didn't give you anything. And from that journey, I was over there and I read everything I could about that culture, and they are amazing. They pick their leaders based on good character, the ability for even temperament. Someone who can temperament's balanced no matter what goes wrong, their sense of responsibility, their honesty, their character. They didn't pick their leaders like we do now. And that's a lesson. And I remind myself that whenever I'm trying to do something or trying to coach, I look at myself and go, I need to be honest here. Am I doing the best I can for these people? Because when you coach somebody, you've got a massive contract. You give them an hour of your life. They give you an hour of your life. There is no bigger contract, you know? So it kind of reminds me about, just trying to do the right thing for the right reason. And that's why, if you look at our politicians, how many come on the telly, Rich, and you go, wow, I really enjoy listening to him.
Well, I think that's a pretty tough one at the moment. I can't remember ever thinking that of a politician that's alive.
Well, a real leader, this is the paradox now, has to sacrifice everything. If you look at what Mandela did and you look at what Gandhi did, a real leader, he's a victim of his own security. Once you commit to lead, these guys who run this country, they're victims of their own security. They've got, if you like, a situation where they can't lead you because they're so comfortable they don't want to damage that. That's why I look at the Native American culture, and I love, and I think that's why I think our forefathers were smarter than we were.
Okay, I'm in motion. Shout stop.
Stop.
Life loop. Right food equals catalyst for the required neuropeptides in your brain equals right behavior. Now, you've talked a little bit about this, neuropeptides and the other chemical reactions. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, first of all, diets don't work, because if they did, the companies that did them, they'd be bankrupt after their first book. So it's lifestyles that work. And educating yourself more about your body, about yourself, is the key to part of your self-actualization. And you've got to keep it simple, and then, but you'll get people go, but it costs a fortune to eat right. Well, it costs more in medicals to keep you healthy. It costs more in medicine and hospitals. But start simply by, I use an analogy called nutrition by volume. If I take a volume of food, what's the maximum nutrients I can get out for that volume? So a typical snack for me will be a plate of raw spinach, some macadamia, a little bit of salmon, tomatoes, olive stuffed with garlic, a little bit of ugas oil. And if you go away and research all the nutrients in that small meal, it surpasses a 4 or 5 or 6 course meal in a restaurant. So for that volume, I've got a high nutrition. It's easy for me because I'm from Sicily. My palate is very that way. I like olives. I like, you know, macadamias. I like spinach. So
you had me at spinach, actually.
Yeah. So when you eat stuff like that, you're giving your body the best chance to catalyst, to manifest and create the massive amounts of complex chemicals it needs for the brain to keep you going. Your brain has got neurons, buttons, and they talk to each other with neuropeptides, which are transmitters. And those transmitters are oxytocins, Valium, endorphins, dopamine, serotonin, and so on and so on. And to make those, you need good nutrition. And your liver needs to be in good condition. The liver loves lemons. Every morning, pint of water, squeeze some lemon in it fresh, and it will help purify your liver. Your liver is like a driving engine of keeping you balanced. So, you know, go away. One book, Primal Blueprint. That's all I ever read on nutrition, and I follow it 70-80%. I don't follow it 100%, because, you know, you've got to have a cheat day and you've got to have a bit of balance and a bit of fun. So in answer to your question, the loop is the right food helps you create the right chemicals, which helps your behavior.
Blueprint.
Blueprint. I think it's still in print. I prefer it to the paleo. I mean, I respect the paleo. But what I like about the Primal Blueprint, it's so close to how I ate when I was in Sicily, and you can simplify it. It basically means, look, you eat good lean meats, good vegetables, nuts, good organic eggs. You don't have to be extreme, you know, water. And it's useful. Like, for instance, if your vegetables are going off or your fruit's going off, get your blender, a pear, an apple, 2 carrots, a handful of spinach, some almonds, a pint of water, press the button, an amazing drink. It will energize you for the whole morning just as the sell-by dates are going. And in that one drink, you've got more than your 5 a day and all your nutrients in it. So, and again, within the Primal Blueprint, I created my own system. I didn't follow it to a T. I made it simpler, you know.
So that's Mark Sisson. Oh, yeah, Mark Sisson, Primal Blueprint is a recommendation. Okay, yeah. There we go. I am in motion. Get ready to shout stop.
Oh, no, you can stop now.
Right. Oh, yeah, I'm glad. I was going to ask you about this. I wrote this down as you said it, actually. Inspiration is like a shower. It only lasts a day. You need to shower often, but don't depend on it.
Yeah, be careful. You know, inspiration only lasts a very short period. And it's like, you know, you go on these courses and you go on to seminars and you come away inspired. And it's like, you know, I've worked in a big corporation and they're all in a meeting and they're all going to do this and do that. And 2 days later, nothing happens. So get inspired, but don't be dependent on it.
What do you do for inspiration?
Sorry?
Where do you seek your inspiration?
Inspiration to me means in spirit. And inspiration can come in many guises. In fact, I was talking to a good friend of mine, Chris, this morning. He looked at my books, and I do what's called snap reading. I'll read 2 pages of a book randomly a day of a different book, and that will feed me. One book might be about, you know, weight training. One book might be about someone's biography. One book might be about coaching, like a great book called The Little Book of Talent. You know, I'll read that occasionally, and it gives you amazing tips of how to coach people and the best way to learn things. So my inspiration comes from that, and it comes from my family even. You know, my wife inspires me. My kids inspire me with things they say. You know, it's all around you if you go looking for it.
I'm in motion again.
You can stop, Rich. I'm getting seasick.
Money is important. It's up there in ranking with air, water and oxygen. But you don't need millions of it to be happy. Again, you alluded to it before, but you said something quite contentious, perhaps, you know, where you were saying that you do need it, where other people would say, no, you don't need money to be happy.
Well, I'm not contentious because I have respect for everybody. And when you've traveled to as many countries as I have, you realize what I mean about that. You become very neutral. Quite often you'll hear guys with lots and lots of money, it's the extremes that say it, saying you don't need it. Well, they say it because they've got it. Yeah. And then you'll hear the other extreme. You know, you'll get someone who likes to ponder the navel and is incredibly spiritual, and that's okay. But they're miserable. They've got no money. They can't help anybody. Money is energy. If you've got the ability to make money, you know, that's why I like, you know, Bill Gates, because he's got the ability to make money and he gives it away. That's fantastic, you know. But at the end of the day, how much money do you need to be happy? What makes you happy is having good friends, good health, a great moment sitting around eating with your friends and family, a good training session, a nice night at the movies, or a good holiday, or a successful completion of a contract where everybody wins, you know. And you can get obsessed with money. So, and I usually find it's the people at the extremes that quote it wrong. The ones who haven't got any at all, who, you know, like they go on about being spiritual. Well, someone's got to build the roads. Someone's got to build a hospital. Someone's got to be a doctor and a dentist to save your life. So this comes back to me being very practical, if you like. You know, that's the engineering side of me that always says, well, how are you going to do that then? So that's my answer to money. It's important. Don't subtract your spending, know your costs, but it's not that important to sacrifice everything for making more money, Rich.
You've got 2 bullet points here. I obviously made you motion sickness, giving you motion sickness with my constant waving up and down the side of this piece of paper. But I notice you've got depression is complex, anxiety is complex. Some need pills, but some just need structure, habit and friends. And anxiety, some need pills, but you just need a stressometer to shut it down. They're very, very similar.
Well, basically, there's some guys out there who've done some good work. I think his name's Barry McDonough, and his work was based on Claire Weeks and Viktor Frankl. I think there's another guy called John Kelly, and they talk about stressometers. You know, anxiety is an overtaxed nervous system. Your nervous system, as you know, Rich, is like you've got the parasympathetic nervous system, which keeps you balanced, and then you've got the sympathetic nervous system, which is your fight or flight. And the way to look at it simply is the parasympathetic is like the brake pedal on your car, and the sympathetic fight or flight is like the accelerator on your car. But you can't drive your car with both feet on those. There's either one working at any time, and that's how the body works. And when you're overtired, overstressed for a long period, took too much on, back to what I said, knowing who you are, what you're made of, what you like when you're pushed, and you're taxed emotionally, your nervous system becomes oversensitized and confused. And those same chemicals that make you excited and are nice excited are the same chemicals that give you that anxiety. So what it is finding a way to handle it. A part of it can be nutrition, because that helps your chemicals to balance your body, you know. And part of it is you've had a disjoint in your life. And there are times in our life, Rich, where we all need friends to jump in the middle of our curse. We all get it wrong sometimes, and a good friend can advise you. And you need to draw a line in the sand, a friend who can advise you with support and can love you, and a friend who can give you wisdom. Sometimes they can give you both, but be careful. Often they can't. So when you're at a point that you're down, you're very susceptible to a lot of suggestions. So if you get support from somebody, but their wisdom isn't good, you'll be on an even worse path. And sometimes you're better off going to someone who's going to give you the wisdom and you don't like what they're hearing. But in answer to your question, find a way to handle your depression and your anxiety, you know, because bootstrapping isn't going to do it. There is a science to this, but there are some people, bless them, who do. This is where medical science is great, where you can mix the medical with the herbal, if you like, and the practical side is that medical science has developed chemicals, and there are some people, you know, who've got, you know, diseases in the brain that they need these chemicals, and people who've had accidents and so forth. So in answer to your question, I honestly think doctors, if they weren't so busy, they should put more time into drawing a line into the sand who really needs them and who doesn't. And that would cut costs down, and I think the people would get better as well.
Tell me about ACOS.
Well, I don't like swearing on, but if you want me to, ACOS food.
Okay, yeah.
ACOS food is basically a collection of shite. So if you want to eat tons of burgers, tons of sausages, tons of pizzas, tons of Coca-Cola, then you're going to reap the downside of that, which is it's going to affect your well-being and your balance. Because when we first came on this planet and you and me were, you know, our ancestors were there, you didn't say to me, Tone, there's a couple of deers over there. We'll just do a couple of Red Bull before I can go and get them, mate. We didn't have Red Bull. We had to basically get our energy from live plants and very fresh meat. And our bodies are programmed that way. We're not programmed. You know, okay, it's okay to have a little bit. We do live in a modern society. You have got to be balanced. And I don't think it's healthy to never have anything. You know, it's good to have a beer and a pizza every now and then and stuff like that. But you need, as a 70-30, 80-20 rule, recognize what it's doing to you. You know, you might as well feel good about yourself. Why not? So that's what I'm saying. That's your food cycle, Rich, you know?
Yeah. One of the things I do at the end of a podcast is to offer each of my victims, guests on the podcast, a go in my time machine. It's a rudimentary thing. It runs on unleaded petrol and there's only so much fuel. And I offer the person a chance to go and talk to their former selves when they were, say, 13, 14, 15 years old and have a whisper in their ear and give them a piece of advice. Would you like to avail yourself of said trip in the time machine? And if you do, what is it you would say to yourself, having now got your 50 odd points on your A4 piece of paper? Could you impart just one piece of wisdom? What would you say to yourself at 14 to kind of guide on the way a little bit and make the bumps that you've experienced a little bit smoother? Would you avail, first of all, do you want to have a go in it?
Well, yeah, but Einstein said time was invented so we didn't have to do everything all at once. So it's subjective, but I'll do it because I care about you, Rich.
Oh, thanks for it's for you to go and meet your former self. I mean, I know it's probably hard to imagine it, but me in my former life when I had hair, I don't think I was as handsome as I am now. But, you know, if you want to bump into me while you're availing the use of the time machine, please feel free. So you're going back and you're bumping into Tony, age 14, 15. Is there something on this list of 50 hard-earned bits of knowledge that you've got in Tony's journal that you would share, or would you say something else?
Well, firstly, I've been really lucky in my life. I've had amazing people come into it continually through every year of my life who've guided me, you know. So I don't know how it's happened, but I'm very lucky. You know, I haven't got any, you know, I haven't, luckily, I haven't been anything, you know, like alcoholic or anything like that, you know, and that's just pure luck. You know, I wasn't really bullied. I had a lot of fights because obviously I came from Sicily, but it wasn't really bullying. So if I had to look back, I'd say don't be so dependent on the good opinion of others. and just recognize that everybody's different, and everybody's you know, thinking is based on their belief system and their programming and their conditioning, and to not be scared to find your own way, not be scared to, you know, go your own path, the road less traveled, you know, and don't be so angry when everybody doesn't agree with you or doesn't see your way. Just accept that everyone's different and just create your own world. You've got a blank canvas, you go paint it. You paint it as you want. You know, that's the advice I would give to myself then, because it took me a while to kind of, you know, I went through a lot of little trials and tribulations to get to some things because of those issues. So that's what I would say.
Tony, it's been an absolute privilege and a pleasure to talk to you today, especially with this piece of A4 next to me. I've got a little black book that I carry around with me periodically, and when something crosses my mind, or I see something that inspires, or whether it be a picture, or whether it be a lyric from a song, or whether it be something that somebody says, I write it in this little black book. I'm going to fold this piece of paper into four pieces, and I'm going to slide it into one of the pages to keep. Thank you, and I wish you well.
Well, thank you, Rich, and you know, I hope the listeners enjoy it, and I hope they recognise that this is just my blueberry pie. I would never steal anybody's thunder. All the information's out there, and there's some great people out there that can guide you. This is just my take on it. So have a great year. Take care, guys.